Good morning, sir, and what is your name, sir?
Craig Fuellen.
Okay, Mr. Fuellen, if you could just hold on for a moment, the Honorable Mr. Will will be the lead on your hearing at this time, sir, and as soon as he gets his paperwork together, he will be the next voice that you will hear, sir.
Good morning, sir. Can you state your full name and ABC number for the record, please?
Yes, sir. Craig Fuellen, 39694.
Thank you, sir. You're appointed for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this morning in regard to a parole hearing. Record parole, home arrest, traffic discharge. I'm going to introduce the board members who will conduct your hearing at this time. To my far right is the Honorable Willie Canales. In the middle is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman. My name is David Neal, and I'll be your hearing lead this morning. So I'm going to go over some information, background information and things that as I go through it, we'll verify that it sounds pretty correct. And then after I get through the basic information, then we'll start discussing the potential for a parole or home arrest or absolute discharge today. Okay, sir?
Okay, thank you.
All right, so you're 58 years old?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So I'll be 59.
Mr. Fuellen is serving two concurrent life sentences for burglary. The sentences began on May 1st, 1978, and originally became parole eligible on March 1st, 1993. He was certified for this hearing on March 16, 2018, and asked for regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. Mr. Fuellen has appeared before the board a total of 40 times. That would include any waived or continued hearings. Well, prior to the day. Mr. Fuellen was granted home arrest on May 4, 1993, but it was revoked on December 16, 1997. The packet does not have information about the reasons for that revocation. Then on October 9th, 2001, he was granted regular parole. It was revoked on July 9th, 2002. Same thing, I have no paperwork showing reason. Then again on March 8th, 2004, Mr. Fuellen was granted regular parole, and it was revoked on July 9th, 2004, for no reason. Then on January 7, 2005, parole was granted, and that was revoked on July 14, 2006. Then on October 7, 2013, Mr. Fuellen was granted parole, and it was revoked in less than 6 months. That particular one was consideration, and eventually, you returned to parole with modifications, but on December 2nd, 2015, Mr. Fuellen was revoked again. the revocations in 2013 and 2015 were due to failing to follow rules and directives, and one time he was threatening staff at one of the halfway houses. So, does that sound correct so far, sir?
No, as far as getting the staff, it was another house guest. It wasn't the staff.
Okay, it was
it was
one of the, I think right now the name of the particular one, but it was during placement and stuff. Okay.
Yes.
So, you have moderate disciplinary history over the term of your incarceration. You've had two tickets in the last 5 years, but you've also been out part of that 5 years on parole. In 2013, there was a disobeying, and then on January 23rd, 2018, and this one is a bit troubling, there was another disobeying. that's fairly recently. I'm looking at the attendance sheet that we have in here. So is there any family or community representatives for Mr. Fuhrer today?
He's an attorney, I think.
Okay, and are you in the county attorney's office?
I am.
Okay. I got two people listed. You're Megan?
I am.
Okay, and Shannon, I can't remember the last name.
Yes, she's a Rule 38 intern with our office.
Okay. Ready? I just want to make notes of that at this point in time, and then we'll get to it in a few minutes. So as I was going on here, we have no family or community support. At this time, you have not listed any release plan, although you are eventually trying to get placed in one of the halfway houses, but there's no acceptance or anything else like that. You have good programming since you've been in. And we do have a letter of opposition from the county attorney's office saying we have a representative from the county attorney's office present today. So, Mr. Fuhrer, it seems that you've convinced the board numerous times that the crimes and all that you have bettered yourself while in prison to make yourself a better candidate for community rather than this would be a blow or unrest situation. But it seems that after you've convinced the board on those other occasions, you've gone out and done things that indicate that you aren't ready to be paroled, aren't ready to be on home arrest. So rather than to belabor the original crime, which is pretty graphic and pretty heinous actions because the one victim and one of the causes, I think we should concentrate on what's been happening since your last revocation, which was only about 2.5-3 years ago, what you've done since 2015 to improve yourself, to be able to conduct yourself a little bit more, under the rules of your release. So I'm going to give the floor to you at this time, and then we'll go from there, okay?
Okay. Yeah, in the past 3 years, I've gone from one unit to another. But what I've basically done is what I've always done. The errors that I've made while on community supervision, I come back and I get those addressed. And one of the issues that I do acknowledge now that I came back and I begin going through counseling because when I was out, I started PTSD counseling at VA, and I didn't realize that I had that effect. I had those symptoms because I never acknowledged it or I didn't know what it was. So as I came back into the system, that was one of the things that I generally focused on was my mental health and trying to understand the thinking that caused me to have outbursts and such like that, which that's what was occurring on these previous violations. It had nothing to do with the general public. It had to do with the people I live around in these halfway houses are basically the same as the ones that are incarcerated. And we don't get along with one another, and that's where that verbal confrontations, came to light. But then I said, this is what I needed to do. I need to address these issues regardless of violations. So I've been doing that. They've got me on medication, that is calming me and making me not think about these, issues and stuff like that, which is pretty much help because, right now I got a lot of peace in me.
Okay. I don't see anything in your programming since quite a while back, specifically. I don't see anything in your...
No, because...
At all. I mean, there ain't arrangement or even... Alcoholics Anonymous, those programs, a lot of people think you have to have a substance abuse issue to gain anything from those 12-step programs, and I think that was the programming you got coming forward at least one of the two times, the last two times you dropped, that you refused to, or you didn't complete the 12-step program you were directed to take. So, I would have imagined that would have been one of the things, especially after the last statement you made, that you would have been trying to pick up on while you were incarcerated. Because my understanding is pretty much every yard out there has availability for AA and NA classes. And they're both basically 12 steps, and that's what you kind of like didn't follow instructions about. So why is that?
Because I didn't complete the program on the streets, this is part of the information that the board doesn't have, is I had an industrial injury. And I just had surgery in the middle of that completion of that program. And I wasn't able to get up and go to these meetings because, I didn't have transportation and things like that. But, it was just I had surgery and I was basically incapacitated. The doctor had me on home rest after the surgery. Like I said, this was an industrial injury accident that I was being taken care of. And I needed to get that done and get that settlement so I can get myself back into the workplace. And I informed them that, look, I'm in a lot of pain. I just had a plate put in, and I got various tubes, and that was where the conflict began. And so there's nothing I can do about it. And the parole officer, she knew that I was, about the injury and things like that. She knew I had been in the hospital for the surgery. She understood that. And I tried to explain that to her, but it didn't pan out. So eventually I was returned to custody. But I, here in the institution, I do go to these programs. I don't go looking for the certificates. I just go. And because that's what I've been doing all these years. I used to be one of the instructors at the AA, I would hold the meetings and things like that. I just go to them. A lot of people look for certificates. That, I've got a 10-year chip out there, I've got all those coins and things like that. I've been drug free now for 14 years. I don't drink due to the fact of health issues, so that's not a problem, with me. But I do go to these programs not looking to have a certificate put on file, because as you stated earlier, there's so much of it that it really, on the forms you couldn't contain it, because that's what I do.
You come before the board and say you've made this progress, but we have no indication at all that you did. Part of the problem, I guess, when you were revoked was that you didn't complete the program, but the second allegation was that you didn't report to the Mesa Regional Parole Office when you were supposed to, and for at least a while, your whereabouts were unknown, and so you were absconded from supervision for a period of time. So, you know, and you know, the two things, well, you were revoked based on that warrant, so...
You know why that's not correct? Because they knew I was in the hospital.
Yeah, sir,
I was in the hospital, yeah.
So I take it on good faith with my experience with Department of Corrections that these warrants are generally pretty correct in what they're saying, and sometimes there'll be a date wrong and everything else like that, but the information that was put on here by the parole officer that wrote the warrant is, you know, it's as easy, you know, the allegation is that you were an absconder. And when it came before the board, you were revoked based on that warrant, the two allegations on that warrant. And
yes,
so,
sir.
But my point is that, to, just like when you were absconder, they didn't know where you were at. If you had been in the hospital during that time, incapacitated, and you brought the paperwork to them or explained it to them, then they know where you're at, they know what you're doing, they know you're under supervision, so you're not going to be counted as an absconder anymore. They go to great lengths not to reincarcerate people, try to get them to follow the program there. But back to my original question about the AA and stuff is, how do you expect us to know what you've done as far as, you know, the self-help and taking programming and stuff if you don't have a certificate, if you don't have something to indicate it? Your age record shows nothing at all about that. And if for quite a while, and nothing since you were reincarcerated in 2013. And, you know, if you're trying to, reform your behavior, so to speak, based on the fact you got PTSD or something like that, I would think that you would want to document all that to indicate to the board that you are making that effort, that you're not, you know, a threat to go back out there and repeat your violations that you've done in the past. I mean, because over the years, you've shown a total lack of responsibility as far as following the rules and everything. You know, when you're on parole, you've got to follow the rules. And I don't know what happens when you're on home arrest, but when you're on home arrest, you're still an inmate, so you've even got tighter restrictions. But if you generally, when you're trying to, you know, show that you're doing things to make yourself a better candidate to be returned to the community, you should be documented, I would think. Because otherwise, you know, you can sit there for 2 hours and tell us all the things you've done, but without documentation, we have no idea whether you really did them or not. So,
yeah,
you know,
I agree with you.
So that's...
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that...
Can I correct you on something, please?
Sure.
When I was placed on home arrest in 1993, my parole was... I was given general parole that same year. I was on general parole from, I believe it was December of 1993 until 1997. I had been taken off of home arrest.
Right, I know. But your home arrest, you were revoked on your home arrest, and then you were returned after a period of time, then you were put out on regular parole instead of home arrest.
Sir, I was taken off of home arrest in 1993.
Okay, well, I have to follow the information that's listed in Ames, and it shows that your home arrest was revoked, not that you were taken off of home arrest and put on parole. Okay, that's the information I have. Okay, so everything in our package shows that every time you were released under any circumstance, you ended up being revoked. You didn't voluntarily say, "I got to go back to prison because I can't stay out here." You were revoked for violations of rules. Okay, and every time that you were revoked, you went in front of the board or waived your hearing to the board, however, when you didn't have board hearing, and the board determined to revoke your parole. The one time there was a tied vote, and so because of the rules, you were returned to parole, but you were revoked not too long after that for another violation. So the question is we need to be able to understand that you have change the way you're going to act in society so that you don't have those problems. And so far, you know, you're not showing us that you really, you're telling us you have, but you have nothing to show that you did make any effort to change the way you behave.
I understand that. Over the past 3 years, Mr. Neal, this is what's happened, why I haven't gotten into the eating program. When I was brought back into the system in 2015, I was sent to a unit, and after getting myself together, some information came to light about my sex offense charges. So I was assaulted and beat up, and that's what I told the last board at that time when I said, I'm here in detention right now. I'm in detention, and I don't know where they're going to send me. I stayed in detention waiting to find out what unit they were going to send me due to the incident that happened at the Yuma complex to me for 8.5 months. Well, they sent me to Winchester in Tucson, okay? And I stayed there, I got there in 2016. And 3 months later, the same thing happened again, okay? I was attacked, property was taken because of the sex offense charges. So I was placed back in CDU again. So I never had an opportunity due to these incidents happening around the institution until I finally got to the unit that I'm at.
Okay, how long have you been at that unit?
I've been here since September.
Since when?
September of last year.
Okay. And have you formally enrolled in AA or anything like that since you got there?
As I mentioned earlier, these programs here in the institution, because of the level of custody, and this is a fact, I'm not on a priority list. And what BOC has is a priority list because they can only have so many of these classes to do the situations. And I applied for them, I'm on the list to go, but due to the fact that as they say to me, as far as going to school, programming, I have so much programming that I don't get on their priority list.
Okay.
So, and that's something that I wrote central office about and asked them, why do I have to be on a priority list to go to these programming? I've yet to receive a response. I've asked the CO3, what is a priority list? What they mean by priority list is getting those who have just come into the system, they get first check at all the programming.
Well, sir, so my understanding of the priority is, you know, a lot of it is based on your end date. And if you're in there on a life sentence, then you're not within the 4 years of release, so a lot of times you're not going to be priority until everybody else has a chance. So we understand that, but, okay, so I'm going to go ahead and see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. Mr. Coons.
I think you've covered quite a bit of the information already. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Dr. Wright.
But Mr. Freeland, you already answered this, but I'm going to ask you again. If I counted correct, this board, not the three of us, but this board has put that trust in you 6 or 7 times. You violated, you've been revoked. Why do you think this board ought to put trust in you again, sir? You let this board down. This board has put you out there. You had your freedom. You were a citizen. For whatever reason, and I know you've given all my reasons, and I'm not denying whether they're true, false, or indifferent, that I'm not going to get into, but each time you violate, not once, but over and over again. Therefore, last time, just a little less than 3 years ago, violated, and you are back again. So how can you convince me as a board member that I should vote to let you out again, sir?
Mr. Wright, all these years that I've been released, one of the things, and this is what I've said before, I said if I was ever released, I would never, ever commit another crime, ever again. I've held to that, that I didn't say that I'm not going to have difficulties out there in that world, because there are. None of the positive things that I was doing out there that the parole officers have information about, it's said here, nothing that I've done, my job, the same job, working for the same company, living in the same apartment complex for 2, 3, 4 years, being a part of a church organization, being a part of one of the jobs that I had, Mr. Wright, I was financial planner for Prudential. That's not documented that I was trying this effort, that I was going to college and working, but that's not documented. The permission that the parole officer gave me to leave the state to go to a, it was a recruitment for a evil management financial planning group that was trying, you know, that was recruiting. And those things are not talked about, you know, the things that I've done out in the community. No traffic tickets, no police contact, no weapons charges, no none of this. I ran into one difficult situation that I never thought about, and that's when I got hurt on my job. I went from a $1,200 a week take-home pay to a $1,200 a month, okay? And I began getting stressed. Every time the doctor said, hey, you'd be back to work in 6 months, 6 months turned into a year. And it just kept going on and on and on. I don't know about depression. I don't know about all these things that they occurred, but I began to lose. I began to lose my ability to pay the $800, $900 a month rent that I'm living in an apartment that I leased by. I don't know how people get out of leases. I have a car that I just
put. Mr. Fuwali, with all due respect, and I really respect you, Mr. Fuwali, you've proven yourself that you're an intelligent individual. You're working for a potential. You do this, you do that. If nothing is in your records certifying that you've done all of this, whose fault is that, sir? Is that DOC's fault? Is that the board's fault? Why didn't you, with all of your intelligence, you're an intelligent gentleman. I'm going to give you credit for that.
Yes, sir.
But you don't, when you said, well, all of this happened to me, but you are the one who had the responsibility to make sure that it's in there. In fact, they ask you, or we ask you, for your progress report. You could have put some of this in your progress report. I don't see it in there. Maybe it's in there and I just didn't read it.
Yes. That's what I was asking here, the CO3s. I asked them what information that I could give them, and they said, we only take off of what is in the computer. And I don't see any more documentation. I don't see anything. So I said, well, I've sent before all my employment history. I've sent before to the board all of residents. Like I said, I've only had three residents on my own. Okay, I sent them all the places that I had lived while I was on release. I sent them all the jobs which they had, this was some time ago, that they knew where I was working and had the same job and things like that. This last time, the reason I know for a fact they knew where I was, because I was at the VA hospital, just got out of surgery, and Homeland Security came up and said, there's a parole officer out here to see you. While I was in the bed, that's when he said, hey, man, saying you absconded, but I knew exactly where you were.
Okay, so I think you answered my questions, so I just want to raise those issues, but thank you so very much. And I'm gonna give my time back to the chair, to our lead at this time, sir. But thank you so very much, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. At this time, sir, in a few minutes, you'll have an opportunity to make a final statement, but I'm gonna move through the county attorney and any victims' representatives that might wanna make statements at this time. So, I don't know, is there any statements from VA? Okay.
There was a statement from the victim.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Carrie Garrison, and I'm a victim advocate with the Department of Corrections. I do have a letter here dated May 22nd, 2018, from the listed victim on this case, K.D. Hadsall. To whom it may concern. Hello, I am one of Craig Fluellen's first and probably youngest victims, as the crime occurred nearly 40 years ago when I was 8 years old. I would like to begin by mentioning that I am well aware that children's behavior is more often than not a direct reflection of the environment and family life in which they were raised. It is extremely sad that people who have not the ability, capability, sound mind, and or the desire should bear children. Unfortunately, for one reason or another, these children are brought into this world, often only to endure neglect and or abuse. Those children learn from their family and environment not what should be an instinctive difference between right and wrong, but rather a distorted reality of truth and truth of reality. They grow up making poor decisions, acting out impulsively and without consideration for others, rationalizing their destructive behavior only upon having to explain, and constantly living in a defense mode, often blaming another for making him commit the wrongdoing. This is nothing that you all are not aware of. I just wanted you to know that I am not without sympathy for those whose minds have been negatively conditioned. I'm sure they would have preferred a healthier environment which allows for healthy decision making. If there is concern whether an action or behavior is right or wrong, the acknowledgement of the doubt should be sufficient warning. Do no harm and treat others as you wish to be treated. Although these children may not have learned the basics of the golden rule growing up, there are laws that distinctively state that what is inexcusably wrong. Craig Fluellen has no excuse. He is premeditative and without remorse for how his actions have harmed so many lives. Just yesterday did I learn that he was never tried for raping me. He was only convicted of the burglary of my mother's home and the attempted burglary immediately following of an elderly couple's home nearby. I was also informed that since he was not charged with the raping me, again, 8 years old, but just the burglaries, he was eligible for parole every 6 months. I cannot fathom why this inmate, who's had so many disciplinary issues while in prison, had been repeatedly granted parole, only to have it soon revoked due to another crime or violation. Sometime in 2000, I received a letter about an upcoming parole hearing. Shortly after I received the letter, but before the hearing happened, my neighbors and I noticed a scruffy-looking man on numerous occasions with an Arizona license plate lingering for long periods of time around my home. He was tinkering with his car. I believe he was stalking me on the inmate's behalf. I had contacted the Arizona Department of Corrections and spoke to a woman who suggested I move, get a P.O. box, and change my phone number. I do not and would not feel safe if he were to be released. How many victims does he have? I am also very curious as to why my rapist, this pedophile, was never charged with this despicable crime. If there's anything I can do so that the rape of a minor under 12 years of age is rightfully added to his criminal record, please let me know. Releasing this inmate on parole would not only provide an opportunity for him to make another mistake, but would guarantee that you did as well, respectively. Please do not release this inmate, this pedophile, who has proven that he is just that and without remorse. Thank you for your time. Sincerely, Katie Hatzell.
Good morning, Honorable Chairman and members of the board. Today, I was going to talk to you just briefly about where this case started and where we are today. When the crimes were committed, the defendant had already committed burglary crimes. He had prior convictions and he was on probation at the time. Part of his reasoning when questioned as to why he was burglarizing homes when he was on probation for burglarizing homes was because he needed the money, the probation officer was after him, he needed these crimes to be paid for, and it was everybody else who was out there to get him, not his fault. That isn't even taking into consideration what happened to the 8-year-old victim in this particular case. She is correct in saying that he did not plead to any charges related to her. However, that does not minimize or erase what he actually did in this case. He has appealed numerous times. He has asked for numerous different post-conviction relief requests, and all of them have been denied. One of his cases, in fact, went to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals said, specifically in their ruling, that we are satisfied that there is nothing in the record to show that the defendant is innocent of the offenses, or that he was not completely and effectively represented, or that he has misunderstood the charges or possible sentences. I bring that up because, again, it always seems to be his lawyer's fault, the probation officer's fault, the board's fault, the community's fault, the people who he is housed with fault. The bottom line in this is that he has never taken responsibilities for his actions. He has never taken his own actions upon himself. He's never tried to better himself. He's had over 48 disciplinary actions while incarcerated, including possession of contraband, threatening staff, disobeying orders, striking a person, false information, lying to an official, physical assault, promoting prison contraband, and most recently the one in January of this year, which is harassment. These are the same actions that put him where he is today. In 1979, when he was arrested for this crime, he gave a false name when he was arrested by police. He's still doing that throughout his prison career. When he was first released in 1993, that was the only time that he was out for more than a year's time. Ever since then, during every following release, it's been about 9 months, if not less. So based on that information, he knows what he needs to do to be successful on the outside, and he never has. He's never taken that step, and he's never taken responsibility. Regarding the most recent harassment, he claims to have been in the current yard where he is for the past, or since September of last year. That would include the most recent harassment would have occurred where he is. There is no reason why he can't go in and get attend these hearings, make an effort to move forward, or there's no reason he shouldn't have continued to do these things during the entire time he's been incarcerated. He talks about specifically what the probation officer did during his last release when he absconded and the injuries that he had. Again, these are nothing more than excuses that play back to the same thing that he did back in the day when he committed these particular crimes. If he is released, he's again going back into the community without a job, without a home, without any of these things. He first committed these crimes because he needed money to pay for things. He said just recently on here that part of his reasons for violating the rules and misbehaving while he was on parole was because he was starting to feel the stress of not having the job that paid the amount of money that he needed to pay his rent, to pay for his car, to pay for everything else. He's going to be in the exact same position as he was when he committed these crimes in the first place. He's had multiple opportunities to change his position. He's had multiple opportunities to prove himself while he's been on parole, and he has failed to do so every single time. Based on that, the state does ask that you continue to hold him in the Department of Corrections. Thank you for your time.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, just for, I don't know what you call it, Nick Corlin, but of course you were, I just want to make sure, are there any supporters in the room for Mr. Fluellen? No supporters? No supporters.
Are there any other victims or victim representatives that would like to speak at this time? No? So, Mr. Fidel, with all that, we've come near to the end of your hearing. We would like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Give us any other information you think we might be able to use to help us make a decision. We do ask that you don't repeat the information that you've already given us. But if you have some more information, some new information, we would like to hear it at this time, sir.
First off, am I allowed to address the issues that were just spoken of as far as the victims who spoke or the people who spoke with red letters?
Yes, sir.
There was a lot of information, but I'm pretty sure you're going to be impressed with them more than myself. Because the first thing they constantly repeated that I have not taken responsibility for my actions. They have not, this is the first time in all these years that anybody's came up and said anything at these hearings from the county attorney. And I understand where a lot of this is coming from, but they never sat into any of these hearings. And from the county attorney to now to come up and state that I'm not taking responsibility, why didn't the state allow me to withdraw that plea and take my case to trial? If this was such an issue, the county attorney refused. They argued left and right not to allow me because I asked him to take this plea back. I wanted to go to trial. If I'm found guilty of these, that's fine. But now they want to make it like I didn't take responsibility or I'm throwing responsibility to someone else. I can't speak about the times of where a lot of what was stated to you from these individuals that are there, but I know exactly where it's coming from because it's never been a victim advocate. I've never had any contact whatsoever with the victim as they are praying to you, because I'm quite sure, being on parole, if I had any contact with my victim, that would be one of my violations.
Excuse me, sir? I would like to say something to you at this point in time so that you are not talking about issues that have not been brought up. Nobody in this hearing has accused you of making contact with the victim after the crime, okay?
Yes,
the comment was made that somebody that they thought you might have had somebody stalking them, okay? So nobody has accused you of making contact.
Well, that made me be a part of that, okay? No matter how it is, if I had someone else do it or this and that, I was still involved in it, and if I had any involvement in it, that would have been a clear violation. Those things never occurred. Never occurred, sir. But I know that's what you're going to believe. And there's nothing that I can do about that. I see that. But the thing was, the life that I was living while I was out was well documented. Well documented. And nothing to that instance says he's got somebody else. And like I said, I'm quite sure you're going to believe that. But for the county attorney to come before this board and speak in the manner that they have, but then let's go back to one of the parole hearings where a board member asked me about a name, and I couldn't remember the name. And he said, that was the county attorney on your case. And this is what that board member said to me, that the county attorney who was on my case at that time, he said, we never expected you to do that much time. But you guys are not going to look at these records. This was a board member, and that shocked me. But now the county attorney is stepping up to state that I should never be released when I'm confused, sir. What is it? I can't, I, you know, I have totally stated at my first hearing in 1993 that I take full responsibility, not my family. That's why I don't have my family coming there. I have a lot of family in this state, a lot of family. But I'm not going to allow them to come up and be dealing with it. Like I wrote a letter to the board, and I said, you humiliated my parents, you humiliated my mother in front of this board, one board member. And I said, no, I'm not going to allow that. My sister just wrote me and asked me, do you want me to attend? I said, no. For this reason, because what I have done over the years in this institution, as well as out there, is to tell people, don't do these things. I sit here every day and I talk to these youngsters. I go out on the street. I'm the only person in my entire family, that's ever been incarcerated. I have nieces, I have nephews, I have cousins, and I speak to them. As far as my financial situation, she just said, I don't have a job. I just told you I had a job. I would walk out of here, every time I walk out of here, within 2 to 3 days of me walking out of this institution, I have a job. I don't have family sending me money. I have my own money. I have 2 accounts out there right now. Right now. That's in control of my sister's in control of. So all these things that were just said to try to convince you that I've been out being this worthless person, and that's what I'm getting. Like I said, I can't do anything about that. What I said, when I came back on the previous violations, I did those things. I apologized and came in and did my time. I didn't argue with the board. I didn't say parole officer did this, or this parole officer was out to get me. Me and my parole officers got along fine. I made that mistake. And the board was told that by me. I'm the one that made it. And I never wrote anything negative. I never walked out of here with a negative attitude for being denied parole. I go back and continue doing my time, better myself. I've bettered myself 100% in the past 18 years than any of you could think of. Mr. Wright, you have met before. Personally. If you're the same person that was in the institution in Tucson back in 2010, you and I have stood out and talked. And you're the one that told me to continue on in the faith walk that I'm doing. And that's exactly what I've done.
I'm not going to respond to you, sir, but 2010, I was not on this board. I have nothing to do with Arizona's criminal justice system at all. I just wanted to put that on record. You said that others say that you questioning others, but that's totally incorrect. 2010.
Okay, yeah,
I just wanted to put that on record, sir.
Yeah, somebody told me that you were working within the Department of Corrections back in 2010.
No, working in the Department of Corrections, period.
Okay, I apologize. Like I said, I kept on saying I couldn't remember, but you know, my mistake, and I take that back. You are not the person.
No, sorry to interrupt you, sir, but I just don't want you to give that type of misinformation, sir.
Like I said, I'm glad you corrected me. I should have asked you. I should have asked instead of making that assumption. But I believe the mistakes that I've made, I've owned up to. I have not had any contact with any law enforcement agency other than my cousin, who is a sergeant with DPS. And that's what I did. I didn't do anything that would say, well, he's a threat to society. There's no law enforcement agency written in any of my reports. True, I've had mistakes, and I know where those mistakes came from. I know how they came about. All I needed was to get my myself back on track. And I was slowly doing that. But I'm back here now for an ex-inmate claiming in a disagreement that I threatened him. And that's something that I can't fathom, that I get punished for what this person says. But I just told you, over the past 2 years, I've been threatened. And I can't even fight back in fear of what this girl might do if they find out where he's fighting back. So I have to take a beating. But none of that's documented as far as forward. On this last write-up, I'd like to explain that, because I have it. And true, I spoke to this officer. I have blood pressure problems. And prior to that harassment ticket, so what they call harassing, I'm asking, and I got the letter, Mr. Fiorella was asking to see a sergeant. That's what he was asking. He was asking to see a sergeant. The officer refused. So I came back, asked again, I'd like to see a sergeant. By the time they got me to medical for what I was asking about, my blood pressure was 172 over 111. Okay? Now, I know I can understand that, and I couldn't understand. Everybody laughed about the harassment. I said, I'm not going to dispute it. If that's what you people think, they're thinking sexual harassment. If I'm to ask them to see a sergeant, that's fine. 2 weeks after, the same officer wrote another inmate up. But this inmate, who did the same thing I did, he later died. So, to me, that write-up that's irrelevant. I'm not harassing staff. I'm not doing that. That's what I want to correct you. And members, I know that I've made some mistakes. And I'm not perfect. I am not perfect. But what's in my heart today is far greater than AA, NA, whatever can offer me. Because now I get teaching from a higher power than all of that, that governs all of this. And that's what my mind is, and that's what my heart is. That's what I wanted to, I basically, you know, wanted to address the letters that was just written from the victim and the county attorney assessment of my character that they don't even know. And I believe these are women who are advocating for justice when they don't even have all the facts themselves. And I understand this women's thing against men.
Sir, we don't need that type of innuendo in this hearing. Okay? The victim is entitled to her thoughts. And she was the victim of a pretty heinous crime that you committed, so she's entitled to that, and she never accused you specifically of being around her. She said she thought that might be happening. The county attorney never made any accusations like that either. She simply was stating your record and the different situations that happened. So we don't need those innuendos because the victim and the county attorney are both women. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm just, you know, trying to get, like, you know, how they read into things. This is how I'm viewing this, because this is over 40 years. This has been over 40 years. I've been entrusted with freedom, true enough, that I have broken the rules. That rules that I had, that given a little time in this institution, I corrected. I did correct it. As I said, my last one was for drug use, and I have not used drugs since. Not one time.
Okay.
So I came in and I corrected my issue. Okay? And that's, I think that's what that was about. But for me to not try to, and I've been going out with the door and not trying to state a claim of why I should be out of prison for the simple fact that I have no more to give. I have no more to give. My heart and my mind says, hey, I wish all of this would stop.
Okay, sir. I understand that, but you're repeating a whole lot of information you've already given us.
Okay.
And if so, can you possibly wrap it up?
Yeah, I wrote out something here just to, so I don't get off track, to let you know what my thinking is. And I appreciate you hearing me. Members of the board, it's been a difficult journey for me these past 18 years to finally accept the call, which I'm so happy that I stayed on the course. I struggled through a lot of hardship in my effort to be an imitator of the person that I'm following now, who I believe in and have faith in and truly trust. It's truly been well worth the suffering to get to the point that I'm at today. When I began thinking that there must be a better way of living life opposite the one I was living at that time, I took the advice of a very vocal teacher who I see on TV. What he said ringing in my ears, I still hear his voice saying those same words even to this day. And I went on a mission. This started in 1998. This man revealed the truth about life to me, and the most spectacular thing that I learned from him was this. You can't correct a person by punishment and laws alone. Only God, through Christ, can make a man whole and right. Man doesn't know if what they seek through punishment has been accomplished. That's why man's correcting another can only go so far, because of man's shortcomings. He will only begin to repay good with evil. Yes, it's true, over the past 2 years, I've stumbled on the road of my journey. I believe we all do in many matters. If anyone does not stumble in word or deed, he then has to be a perfect person. For myself, I put no claim to perfection, yet I am a work in progress. But one thing is assured, because who dwells in me, I will never turn again to the weak and worthless elementary principles that once ruled my life. I know now the way of man is not in himself. It's not for man who walks and directs his own steps. When he does, that's when the chastisement of displeasure comes upon him. That's why my desire has been for some time now to behave well in every situation. I've taken back what the vocal teacher said for me to take back, and I've never given it up. I am at rest now and no longer pursuing my own exhausting expectations for who I should be. It's not meant for me to direct my own steps. In peace, I lie down and I sleep. Members, I have a family out there. I have children. My nephew just graduated from NAU. You know, I was happy to, send him a gift. A financial gift. And that's what I've been doing with a lot of the money that I have. My sister keeps telling me, you're running out of money. But, I've just been giving it away because I really
okay, sir, sure. Sir, can you address the issues today and not all of the other stuff? You have family, you've established that you have family and that you have money and that you can get a job really easy. So is there anything else that you can give us that would help convince us that you should be released at this time?
Yes, I made the mistake in not getting all the information to you about what I was doing out there. And that was wrong, and it was difficult. But I know I made these mistakes. I am so sorry for that. I am so sorry that instead of me asking, I ask now for help. And that's what I just said. I don't do this by myself. I know now it's okay to sit up here and say, hey, Mr. Board, Mr. Parole Officer, so-and-so, I'm running into difficulties. Can you advise me? That was my huge mistake, one of my biggest regrets. 1993, like I said, I apologize for everything that I've done to everybody that I've hurt, those who have got hurt.
Okay, you're repeating yourself again, sir.
Well, I'm going somewhere with that. But now, I'll be 59 years old. And I want to give back some kind of way. And that was what my goal is when I leave here. I've got to give back. I've got to do the things that I was generally designed to do. I'm never going to commit crimes. I've already told you that. I'm never going to harm anybody. I've said that, and I've stood on that. But one thing I want to do is get out of here and show the character of a man that I am today. Not by sitting here and hoping, which that's all I have, is hope.
Okay, but
that I can show you guys.
Okay.
That I can be, I am a better man. That I am a better man.
Okay. All right. We thank you for that. The board is going to go into discussion to make a decision. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're talking to you, but we won't be. We'll be discussing your case. But you're welcome to stay on the phone. In fact, we ask you to stay on the phone. You can listen to the entire conversation. And when we're done, I will get back to you, okay?
Oh, I just, one more thing. I just got this from the CO3 today as we were coming over here for the hearing. As I stated, I'm a veteran, and the reason I couldn't put down placement is because the VA rep had just got to this unit early this month, and I told her what was happening as far as placement, and this is what I can mail that letter to you.
What is the letter concern? Is it showing that they will accept you somewhere?
Yes, and what she said, the reason, you know, you will need to apply to the programs when you grant a release, because to wait for a billet can take 2 to 3 months. That's what I have been waiting to get back from.
Does this letter say that if you were to be released, say at the end of this week or in the next week, that you would have placement at that time? Or does it say you have to wait 3 months after you've been released?
No. If I'm granted parole, because she knows what my situation is, she said, if I am granted release, it would take 2 to 3 months to get a bed, to get everything worked out.
All right. Thank
you. I wouldn't be leaving right away. He had just gave that to me this morning, and because I've been waiting for her. He emailed her 3 weeks ago,
okay.
And I just got that information. I can mail that to you from a VA rep, Department of Veteran Affairs.
Okay. Well, it would be good to include that in the records. And thank you for that information. So, so the board is going to go into discussion to make a determination. Stand firm, you can listen, but please remain silent, and I'll get back with you in a couple minutes, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, the board is now in discussion. Well, this is definitely an unfortunate case. Going clear back to the beginning is it was a pretty, the totality of the crimes and being on probation, everything was pretty bad, but I felt that if he had convinced the board to release him on several occasions, we didn't need to spend too much time on the original offenses. I do not want to discount the young lady's feelings as a victim. I understand completely why she could be overwhelmed with the idea that her charges were never tried or are listed in the convictions, but I also understand the way the state can structure a plea agreement to get the best possible results. So I do understand that. But my biggest concern there is he's been in Graham's and Perone's home arrest and parole a total of 6 times. That he's violated every one of them. The last violation has been less than 3 years ago. And no programming since then, nothing to document that he has done anything to move in the right direction so that he can, you know, follow stuff. I believe that he got injured and may have been in the hospital, and the PO knew, but there's no circumstance of that, I'm sure, that the PO wouldn't put that in his work. The abscond time. And absconding doesn't mean you ran away. It means that you're not making contact. You can be living in the same place you've been living for 20 years, but if you don't contact your PO when you're supposed to, they consider you as an absconder. So I am just not comfortable at all with the progress that Mr. Luke Flewellyn has made to this point in time, and I would not be in favor of granting parole or home arrest or absolute discharge at this time, but I'm willing to listen to discussion from any of my fellow board members. Mr. Canales.
Yes, I'll keep it short. I took a lot of notes, but I think we've had a pretty lengthy hearing. We've heard quite a bit from Mr. Flewellyn. I'll say, leading up to this, I'm concerned that Mr. Flewellyn refers to his past burglaries, and what I have to take in good faith in the report, a child rapist mistakes. Now, he spoke of what's not documented in Ames or in this parole file, but I'll tell you what is documented, and that is that Mr. Flewellyn cannot abide by the conditions of release. He was probably made compelling arguments, and I say this with respect to past boards, because the board is the board, but I cannot abide by sticking our necks out, or sticking my neck out one more time on behalf of the people of Arizona to grant parole or absolute discharge. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir.
Yes, thank you. I think that Mr. Flewellyn has provided the board with some misinformation. And I think that he started his whole discussion about how he's changed over the years and how he's had this training and so forth. I think that Mr. Flewellyn is just trying to come up with an excuse to impress this board to release him, regardless of what facts say. I think that he's concentrating more on what he feels that others have done to him rather than what he has done. I think that when he just threw out misinformation, totally misinformation, he accused others of doing it, but he stepped right into it himself. Total misinformation. I think that this is very sad. I wish Mr. Flewellyn the best, but we're here with this situation today. Has he done anything as one board member to earn my vote to release him? Has he done anything over the past 2.5 years? Has he done anything since he's been incarcerated to come before this board, not these same board members, but this board 6 times? This board has given him the opportunity, given him his freedom, and yet here we are back again. Therefore, as a board member, and as one who respects this board, I just cannot at this time support moving him to his, grant him term parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. So, based on our discussion and the information from our hearing, I'm going to move to deny Mr. Flewellyn the right of parole home arrest or absolute discharge at this time. Because of the age of the crime, we can't go for a one-year set-off. And after we vote, I will list the reasons. So that would be my vote to, or my motion to deny Mr. Flewellen whether for a home arrest or absolute discharge at this time. And a one-year set-off.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, Mr. Neal, seconded by Dr. Wright, and then by Mr. Canomas. The reason is that it's a serious and violent offense, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, pain to the victim. I would say because of the age of the victim, serious bodily injury. Overall, the life of multiple victims, and based on the young victim's case and victim harassment, violated previous probation or parole, prior criminal history, and that would be a repeat offender, poor institutional behavior because of his disciplinary and recent disciplinary. Lack of recent programming and needs closer supervision at this time before the release plan, and no evidence of family or community support. Is there anything else that anybody would like to hear? In that case, Mr. Farrell, do you understand the discussion, the reasons, and that we revoke or that we deny your parole, home arrest, or regular discharge, absolute discharge at this time? Do you understand?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So based on that, we do wish you luck. Try to find the things that need to be done to improve yourself and your behavior. So, and we do wish you luck in your journey through this situation. And this will end your hearing, and please put the CL3 back on the phone.
Thank you, and please do wish you well.